Thank you so much, Jerry, for lending yourself to this question and answer session. I'm sure that it could have lasted for 2 or 3 hours. Everybody wants to ask questions. I'm really happy the way it went. But we have to move on to the formal ceremony, which will welcome the rector of the Academy of Paris and the chancellor of the university, our colleague Gilles Pécou, who will be here, and he will start by giving a first address, and then I will talk, and you will have some time to answer. Bien, Monsieur le Recteur, merci d'être présent à l'école que tu connais si bien. C'est toujours un grand plaisir de te revoir avec nous. L'école que tu ne quittes pas, on sait qu'elle est toujours chère à ton cœur, mais t'avoir dans nos murs, dans cette cérémonie, en tant que recteur, est un moment évidemment important. Et donc, je te cède tout de suite la parole pour une première exposé.
Monsieur le gouverneur de Californie, cher lauréat, monsieur l'ambassadeur, madame l'adjointe à la maire, mesdames et messieurs les élus, monsieur le conseiller du président de la République, madame la conseillère, monsieur le directeur de l'école normale supérieure, monsieur le président de Paris Sciences et Lettres, son représentant, PSL, mesdames et messieurs les présidents, vice-présidents d'université, de commu, président et directeur de grands établissements, messieurs les directeurs adjoints de l'école normale, madame la directrice générale des services, mesdames et messieurs les professeurs d'université, enseignants-chercheurs, chers et chers collègues, mesdames et messieurs les étudiants et les élèves de l'école normale, chers et chers camarades, madame Anne Brown, she's here, chère madame, ce que dit notre assemblée réunie autour de vous, monsieur le gouverneur, dans la salle des actes de l'école normale, c'est la volonté de la communauté scientifique et académique parisienne que je me trouve représentée comme recteur de Paris et chancelier de ces universités, volonté d'honorer un personnage insigne, un itinéraire aussi éminent qu'original, de restituer une œuvre qui dit le lien entre transactions intellectuelles et actions dans l'espace public. Deux démarqueurs, me semble-t-il, deux démarqueurs historiques de l'écosystème normalien que vous connaissez déjà et qui, en tout cas, vous reconnaît. Cet espace public que je mentionnais est d'abord le vôtre, celui de la Californie, dans laquelle se déploie et s'est déployée cette action, parabole qu'il ne me revient pas de dessiner avant votre illustre parrain, le directeur de l'école. Qu'il me soit cependant permis de vous dire le plaisir que j'ai également, comme historien, d'accueillir le haut magistrat d'un État américain, d'une région et d'un État américain qui, au XIXe siècle, suscitait l'admiration politique des progressistes et même des utopistes. Le plus célèbre d'entre eux, progressiste, utopiste, je ne sais pas, mais en tout cas progressiste, qui était aussi un grand pédagogue, Pierre Larousse, auteur du grand dictionnaire universel du XIXe siècle, dès les années 1860, résumait ainsi la trajectoire sommaire institutionnelle de la Californie depuis son rattachement de juillet 1850 aux États-Unis. Il écrivait « La constitution de la Californie est l'une des plus libérales parmi celles qui régissent les États américains. L'esclavage y est prohibé, le pouvoir exécutif est séparé du pouvoir législatif et judiciaire. » Le libéralisme admiré du XIXe siècle, héritier direct, il faut le rappeler, de nos révolutions communes depuis la fin du XVIIIe siècle, n'est-ce pas ce qu'incarne au XXe siècle, puis au XXIe siècle, en dépit du sens compris les mots, la volonté de défendre la personne et l'intérêt public à la fois, et de retrouver peut-être le lien entre démocratie sociale et démocratie politique. C'est peut-être aussi, sans passer par le religieux, notre remède à nous contre la catastrophe banalisée du philosophe que vous connaissez bien. C'est en tout cas la première réponse que vous avez donnée, vous, en luttant à la fois contre le chômage et contre le réchauffement climatique. Et s'il faut accompagner l'action de la réflexion, évidemment, la rue d'Ulm, à n'en pas douter, est le lieu privilégié où vous pourrez poursuivre ces séries de dialogues, pour citer l'un de vos titres, conversations pluridisciplinaires qui vous sont chères. Alors, simplement, loin de cet espace sacré de l'échange, je me contenterai d'une observation de recteur, en redevenant pédagogue, comme il se doit, et ce, au lendemain du grand sommet sur la planète, qui a été organisé par le président de la République et où j'accompagnais des jeunes de notre académie qui ont pu s'entretenir avec l'exécutif du Globe sur les sujets que vous portez, vous. En effet, votre distinction me permet d'insister, banalement c'est vrai, mais sur les liens entre recherche, éducation et action publique dans le domaine du développement durable. Les professeurs de l'enseignement primaire et secondaire savent bien qu'ils ne peuvent rien sans le concours fondamental des femmes et des hommes de science. Sinon, ils ne disposeront pas du recul critique qui seul leur permet de transporter efficacement des messages politiques, des messages d'action publique chez nos jeunes. C'est donc en pensant à cette légitimité que donne la science à la pédagogie comme vecteur de l'intérêt commun que je me félicite de vous voir décerner le titre de docteur honoris causa, et ici surtout. Je m'en réjouis en pensant que lorsque fut créé le doctorat honoris causa à Paris en 1918, à la Sorbonne, le premier récipiendaire fut aussi un grand démocrate américain, le président Wilson. Je ne suis pas étonné de voir notre chère école normale reprendre le flambeau grâce à vous, cher Jerry Brown, grâce à vous, monsieur le gouverneur de la Californie, vers lequel vont toutes mes félicitations.
Monsieur le recteur, madame l'adjointe à la maire de Paris, monsieur l'ambassadeur, monsieur le conseiller du président de la République, chers collègues, chères étudiantes et étudiants, mesdames, messieurs, c'est avec un immense plaisir que je vous accueille donc maintenant pour cette deuxième phase, pour cette remise du doctorat honoris causa pour le gouverneur Jerry Brown. Et en hommage à sa présence, je me permettrai de continuer cette allocution en anglais. J'espère que les anglophiles dans la salle ne me tiendront pas rigueur des imperfections de ma présentation et que les défenseurs de la francophonie, qui manquent rarement une occasion de m'épingler, admettront que le plurilinguisme, en l'occurrence, n'est autre qu'une très sincère expression de respect et d'amitié pour l'impétrant du jour. As Rector Pécou just reminded us, the notion of doctorate honoris causa was created relatively recently in the Sorbonne, a century ago, at a time when the state of California already existed, so you can measure how young is this institution. At the École Normale Supérieure, this tradition is even more recent. The first doctorates were awarded in 2003. In 2014, I had the privilege to distinguish three outstanding personalities: James Rothman, professor at Yale University and Nobel Prize winner in medicine, who is a frequent visitor of our physics and biology departments; George Steiner, the well-known writer and philosopher, born in Paris, student in the USA, and who ends his career in Cambridge, UK, where I traveled to handle him his diploma; and finally, Saskia Sassen, the global city sociologist at Columbia University, who also received the Prince of Asturias Award. These names add up to a wonderful list of recipients like Bill Phillips, Nobel Prize winner in physics, Marta Nussbaum, the mathematician and Fields medalist Gregory Margulis, or the writer and Nobel Prize winner Toni Morrison. We even awarded once this doctorate to a politician, namely the Italian president Carlo Azeglio Ciampi. Gilles, you certainly remember that occasion. What is a doctorate honoris causa? I have a short answer to that question. I think it is both a statement and a coup de cœur. Coup de cœur, I will not try to translate. I see that Barbara Cassin is here. So I suggest, Barbara, that you add it to your wonderful dictionary of the words that cannot be translated from one language to another. Friendship at first sight. That's one attempt. I will give it as a challenge to the audience. And before the end, because there are very, very knowledgeable people in this audience, I'm sure that by the end of this ceremony, someone will come up for an expression of coup de cœur. But maybe you can keep it in French, just in your own heart. The coup de cœur goes back to your visit here in 2015 that I recalled earlier this morning. On that day, many of us discovered, with true amazement, a major political leader who was able to push a major agenda, the absolute necessity of a deep energetic transition. And we learned a lesson in political leadership. When the strategic goal has been decided, all the decisions that make everyday life of a political leader so complicated become much clearer and in a way simpler. I still remember very well the way you answered a question by Sébastien Balibar, my friend physicist. Sébastien was basically telling you, well, with the way Californian cities are organized, spread over hundreds of miles, it's basically impossible to implement any efficient, energetically efficient system of public transportation. You had, on that day, I don't know if you remember, you had a very simple answer. You said, okay, then we'll densify our cities and make them more concentrated, more vertical. And I remember you had really this gesture with your hands. Of course, in your plan, this statement is blended with another major action and a more short-term one, promoting no-emission cars. But in itself, it did carry a very powerful political message. If you really believe that the planet is at stake, then there is no action, however daring, that should not be considered. You are often described, dear Jerry Brown, as a philosophy buff, close to the French school of thought in Stanford University, including René Girard and Michel Serres. Michel Serres, who, by the way, will be lecturing at the École Normale in this room later on today at 5 p.m. So if you have a few more hours here in Paris, I suggest that you escape from the journalists and political appointments and come back here for a small treat, a class of philosophy among the students, 5 p.m. in this room. You are also, we know that, a close friend of Jean-Pierre Dupuis, who helped us organize this event, and I want to thank him very much. And it's very clear that you had many occasions to discuss the theory of enlightened doomsaying, not only doomsaying, but enlightened one, with him. In itself, this bond to the French school of thought in Stanford might be considered as very suspicious by some in the US. And I am actually quite surprised that you managed to get such a strong support and such a long and remarkably successful political career with such a handicap. But of course, seen from here, your connection and intellectual debates with French philosophers in California and the consequences that you were able to draw from those debates in practical terms, giving a totally unusual depth to the decision that must be taken by your political leader, all these took part in our coup de cœur, and we are happy to welcome you in this select club of the ENS alumni. I'm sure that the philosophy buff will appreciate belonging to the same society of fellows as Henri Bergson, Jean-Paul Sartre, Raymond Aron, Jacques Derrida, or Michel Serres, and many others. But let's go back to the second aspect of this doctorate, which I call the statement. In order to do that, I need to take a step back and tell you a little bit about our school, the École Normale Supérieure. In this small elite school that enrolled for many years around 100 students per year, and which has now increased its enrollment to the stratospheric number of 320 students per year, here were initiated some of the most influential lines of thought in philosophy and literature of the 19th and 20th centuries. And we are proud to be the world-leading university for the ratio of Nobel Prize winners to the number of our students. We have a ratio which is a double of that of Caltech, sorry for California friends, and four times as much as Harvard or Cambridge. The École Normale Supérieure was actually created at the time of the French Revolution, and its original goal was to select a couple of thousands of fellows coming from all over France who would be trained by the very top scientists and scholars of the time before getting back, each of them to his own county, where he would, in turn, create a school for training teachers. The story in itself is very interesting, but I will not have time to enter the details. Let us just say that from its very beginning, and in some sense, the École is a daughter of the Enlightenment period. Since then, its fundamental values, knowledge, critical thought, intellectual freedom, have served as a guideline to the training of generations of new students who became leaders in their own field, with a special focus towards academia, of course, but also public service. It turns out that the present time is a particularly worrisome one for a daughter of the Enlightenment, who watches the slow decline, in a large part of the world, of the political pillars which used to guide us for a couple of centuries. that of democratic states trying to anchor their decisions on science, on reasoning, on knowledge, on the collective elaboration of consensus. Although these conditions were rarely, or probably never, fully satisfied, they were structuring the political decision-making process. And they now tend to be substituted by authoritarian regimes which don't pay any attention to the most serious long-term issues of our world. At the forefront of these long-term issues, let me focus on the threats called by global warming. Today, I would like to convey our most heartfelt thoughts to you and to all our friends in California while you are still fighting against wildfires that have become so much threatening to your state this fall. I spent a year in Santa Barbara, and I remember I witnessed at that time one of these fires coming down from the hills to Santa Barbara, and it was extremely frightening, and I think it was a small-scale one with respect to the one that you are fighting nowadays. Among the long-term issues, let me also quote the difficulty to feed the planet and to supply the necessary quantity of good quality water, the threats caused by nuclear proliferation, you talked about it, and maybe also, to some extent, the threat of genetic manipulations, which are becoming cheap and relatively accessible, making their control a big challenge. Global warming and nuclear proliferations are two issues that you have been consistently placing on top of your agenda and which provide a long-term strategic framework to your action. Here at École Normale, we are pushing several initiatives on these issues, both in teaching and research. We participated in the COP23 through a delegation including teachers and students, and we are about to be recognized as one of the few universities which are recognized as official research and independent organization for the Convention of Climate Change. We are happy to welcome soon a new colleague, Alessandra Giannini, presently at Columbia University, who will come to École Normale within this new framework of the Make Our Planet Great Again initiative launched by President Macron. As you could see in the discussion just before, our students are extremely motivated by these issues, and we have built up a transverse teaching platform which brings together students and teachers from several departments in science, social science, and humanities. At a time when dreadful decisions are being made, such as the US decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement of 2015, you, Jerry, have been emerging as one of the few political leaders able to come up with a different voice and to organize the reaction of cities and of states very concretely, adopting a bottom-up process which looks like a major step forward to reach the goal of a less than 2 degrees warming by the end of the century. It is a major political fight, but also a cultural one, and I insist very much on this cultural aspect because it brings a timescale to your action, which is not the natural timescale of politics, and that's really a major issue. It's also an intellectual fight that you are leading. Our statement today with this doctorate is a recognition of the major importance of this fight for our planet and for our future. So, Edmund Gerald Brown Jr., in recognition of your outstanding career and your amazing political impact, it is my privilege to bestow upon you, on behalf of the École Normale Supérieure, the Diplôme de Docteur Honoris Causa.
So, well, this is very overwhelming, and I'm very glad to be a part of it. And at my next academic function, I'm definitely going to wear this, than the more humble colors of my alma mater at Yale or the University of California at Berkeley. Anyway, I want to make two references now that I'm here in Paris, to indicate the long-term influence of Paris and French thinkers. I joined the Jesuit order in 1956, and as I learned more and more about the Jesuits, I learned that Ignatius Loyola and six of his companions studied at the University of Paris. And this was around 1540. In that neighborhood. So the Parisian educational influence reached all the way to California through the Jesuit order. But that wasn't all. During the time I was in the Jesuits, and after I had taken vows, which you do after completing 2 years, you take the vow of poverty, chastity, and obedience, a friend of mine, one of my fellow Jesuits, had a visitor from our mutual high school, St. Ignatius. And this visitor who I went out to speak to, and I hadn't met any other visitors because in the first 2 years you're not allowed to talk to anyone. This was a very cloistered experience. So this particular visitor, young man, told me about this French writer, Albert Camus, and he talked about the idea of the absurd. And even though I had never heard of Albert Camus, nor had ever read anything by him, just hearing about this idea of absurd, of the human heart reaching out, as it were, to infinity, and the universe absolutely silent, that had a big impact on me. And being in the Jesuit order with all that obedience, how absurd. And the world, if it's that absurd, I got to get out there and live it to the fullest. And I was very influenced by that that just report on the absurd. And of course, after I left, I went to Berkeley, and I finally began to read about the myth of Sisyphus. And I roll my stone up the hill every day. And that's what we're doing, dealing with climate change. Thank you.